Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I'm Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Sunday, April 12th, 2026, which means we are bringing you the top trending stories from yesterday, April 11th. This is episode number 363, and we have a really fantastic lineup for you today.
We really do. We are going to be talking about the historic and safe return of the Artemis II moon mission, a fascinating reality check on AI cybersecurity models, France's big move to ditch Windows for Linux, South Korea rolling out universal basic mobile data, and finally, a hilarious but concerning paper from Berkeley on how AI agents are completely gaming our top benchmarks.
Let's kick things off with some massive space news. The Artemis II crew safely splashed down near San Diego on Friday night. This was a 9-day mission, taking 4 astronauts further from Earth than any humans have ever traveled.
It is just a monumental, historic moment. Commander Reid Wiseman, pilot Victor Glover, mission specialist Christina Koch, and Canadian astronaut Jeremy Hansen all made it back safely after that high-speed re-entry. The vibe at the NASA press conference was just pure relief and joy. You could really feel the weight of the moment when the NASA officials were speaking.
Reading through the Hacker News comments, the discussion really zeroed in on the risk profile of this mission. A user named Aerioform pointed out that this is the first extremely public, widely acknowledged high-risk mission NASA has done in over 50 years. They noted that according to NASA's Office of Inspector General, the acceptable crew mortality rate for Artemis is actually 1 in 30.
Which sounds incredibly high to a lot of people. Another commenter replied, saying it seems insane that decades after Apollo, with all of our technological advancements, we accept a system where 1 in 30 missions could end in tragedy. They were asking, is that really what we document as acceptable?
But the original poster came back with a really thoughtful response. They explained that the physics and energies involved at these distances just make it impossible to engineer away all the risk with our current level of technology. We tend to view the Apollo missions through rose-colored glasses, but those were incredibly dangerous too. At least 10 astronauts were killed in training during that era.
Exactly. We are still a pretty primitive species when it comes to harnessing the forces needed to leave Earth's orbit. The discussion also veered into a really interesting comparison with the space shuttle program. People love to hate the shuttle because it ended up failing expectations due to political constraints. But as the commenter pointed out, the shuttle was a genuine, almost economically insane advance for its time.
Yeah, they called the shuttle an odd Frankenturduckling because it was designed for one mission that never really happened. There was this whole aerospace nerd fan theory in the thread about how the shuttle's massive cargo bay was actually sized specifically to capture certain Soviet space assets if World War III ever broke out. Whether that is entirely true or just Cold War paranoia, it highlights how different the constraints were back then compared to Artemis today. It is just amazing to see humanity pushing the envelope again and doing it successfully.
Moving from outer space to cyberspace, our second story got over 900 points. It is a blog post from the company Isle titled AI Cybersecurity After Mythos, The Jagged Frontier.
For some context here, Anthropic recently announced a huge new project called Glasswing and a limited access model called Mythos. They showcased Mythos autonomously finding thousands of zero-day vulnerabilities, including a 27-year-old bug in OpenBSD. It sounded like a massive, game-changing leap forward for AI security.
But the team at Isle decided to test those exact same showcase vulnerabilities using small, cheap, open weights models. And guess what? The small models found them too. An open model with just 3.6 billion active parameters, costing 11 cents per million tokens, successfully detected the flagship FreeBSD exploit Anthropic was showing off. Even a 5.1 billion parameter model recovered the core chain of that complex 27-year-old OpenBSD bug.
The main takeaway from the Isle team is that the defensive moat in AI cybersecurity isn't the massive frontier model itself. It is the system and the scaffolding built around it. If you have the right orchestration, you can deploy 1,000 cheap models to scan an entire code base for pennies, rather than paying top dollar for one brilliant but expensive model to guess where to look.
The Hacker News thread on this was super nuanced. A user named John FN pointed out that Anthropic's Mythos cost about $20,000 across 1,000 runs to find that OpenBSD bug. That's still way cheaper than hiring a team of human security researchers. but they argued that the real value of the big models is automation. If you point a small model at 10,000 files, it might hallucinate 9,000 fake vulnerabilities, which is useless.
Right. False positive discrimination is the real bottleneck in security. But IELTS testing actually showed something surprising there too. On a basic false positive test from the OWASP benchmark, small open models actually outperformed the large frontier ones. They called it inverse scaling. A massive model would overthink a simple Java snippet in Flagger, while the small models correctly identified it as safe.
It just proves that AI capabilities right now are incredibly jagged. One model might score perfectly on finding a buffer overflow, but completely fail at basic mathematical reasoning about an integer overflow. There is no single best model for everything, and the comments really reflected this realization that system architecture and how you prompt and chain these models matters way more than just buying access to the biggest API.
Speaking of architecture and systems, let's talk about operating systems at a national scale. Our third story is about France's government announcing they're ditching Windows for Linux, citing US tech dependence as a strategic risk.
This directive came from the French Interministerial Directorate for Digital Affairs, or DINIM. They have ordered all ministries to map out their dependencies on extra-European tech and plan an exit strategy by this fall. The Minister of Public Action made a really strong statement, saying the state can no longer accept that their data, infrastructure, and strategic decisions depend on solutions whose rules and pricing they do not control.
It is a bold statement, but if you read the Hacker News comments, the skepticism is absolutely palpable. A lot of readers immediately brought up the famous Linux saga in Munich.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Back in the early 2000s, Munich migrated thousands of city council computers to Linux, and it was heralded as this massive open source victory. But years later, they reverted back to Windows.
Exactly. A commenter noted that Microsoft put enormous effort into killing that Munich project. High-level executives like Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates made personal visits to Munich officials to win them back, and Microsoft even put a headquarters in Bavaria. So commenters were quick to point out that European officials announcing a move away from Windows is almost a ritual at this point. You see the headlines, people get excited, but the actual execution gets bogged down.
One user joked that the French government wouldn't last 5 minutes without Microsoft Teams. But then someone else chimed in to say that Teams is terrible for large meetings anyway, and that Slack and Zoom both work perfectly fine on Linux.
There were definitely defenders of the French plan in the thread. Someone pointed out that the French Gendarmerie, which is one of their national police forces, successfully switched to Linux over a decade ago, and they are still using it. So the groundwork has actually been laid.
And the geopolitical climate is very different now than it was during the Munich experiment. With things like the US Cloud Act, European governments are genuinely concerned about digital sovereignty. One commenter mentioned that performative anti-Americanism is a feature of European politics, but another replied asking, what is performative about not wanting to go down with a sinking ship? It is clear that trust in U.S. tech companies as neutral partners has eroded significantly over the last few years. It will be really interesting to see if France actually follows through at scale this time.
Let's shift gears to another fascinating government tech policy. Our fourth story takes us to South Korea, where the government has introduced what they are calling Universal Basic Mobile Data Access.
This is such a cool concept. Basically, over 7 million subscribers in South Korea will now get unlimited data access at 400 kilobits per second after they exhaust their regular data caps. The three major telecom companies in the country all agree to implement this plan.
The reasoning behind it is twofold. First, the Minister for Science and ICT stated that citizens simply cannot do without access to online services anymore. It is a basic right. But the second reason is a bit more punitive. The telecom companies have had some massive security lapses recently, including a 3 terabyte dark web data leak from LG U+, and some really woeful security practices at KT. So the government is framing this as the telcos needing to re-earn their social license to operate.
400 kilobits per second isn't exactly streaming 4K video, but it is plenty for messaging apps, basic web browsing, email, and accessing essential government or banking services. In the comments, someone quoted a sci-fi book from the 80s by Louis Master Bujold, where a character from an advanced planet is shocked that another world doesn't have universal access to the communications network. They compared it to the U.S. Constitution authorizing the Postal Service centuries ago to guarantee communication for everyone.
It makes you wonder why more countries don't do this. A commenter from the UK mentioned that during the height of the pandemic, their government mandated zero rating data for government and healthcare websites, which was a step in that direction.
But there was a bit of debate about that approach in the thread. People pointed out that zero rating specific domains can create a walled garden effect and violate net neutrality. Someone noted that the UK's regulator, Ofcom, actually has pretty strict rules about what can and cannot be zero rated. That is why South Korea's approach of just throttling the speed but keeping the entire internet accessible is probably the much better way to go. It guarantees basic connectivity without the telecom companies playing favorites with specific websites.
All right, let's wrap up with a story that really exposes some of the smoke and mirrors in the AI industry right now. Researchers from UC Berkeley published a blog post titled "How We Broke Top AI Agent Benchmarks and What Comes Next."
This was a brilliant and honestly hilarious read. We see these leaderboards updated every week with new AI models claiming higher and higher scores on complex reasoning and coding tasks. But these Berkeley researchers built an automated scanning agent that systematically audited 8 of the most prominent AI benchmarks, including SWEbench, WebArena, and OSWorld.
And they found that every single one of them could be exploited to achieve near-perfect scores without the AI actually solving the task. It is the ultimate real-world example of Goodhart's Law. When a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure.
The exploits they found are just incredible. For SWEbench, which is supposed to test an AI's ability to fix real GitHub issues, the agent just wrote a 10-line Python script that hijacked the testing framework. It forced the framework to report all tests as passed. It didn't fix the bug at all, it just hacked the grader.
It gets better. In WebArena, which tests an agent's ability to navigate the web, the AI realized the reference answers were stored locally on the testing machine. So instead of browsing the web to find the answer, it just output a command to navigate the browser to a local file URL and read the answer key directly from the configuration files. It is literally cheating on the test by stealing the teacher's answer sheet.
And for Fieldwork Arena, which has almost 900 tasks, the validation script was completely broken. It only checked if the last message in the chat came from the assistant. It didn't even read the content of the message. So the exploit agent just sent an empty JSON bracket and scored 100% on every single task.
The Hacker News community had a field day with this paper. A lot of people pointed out that AI companies often want marketing material, not legitimate benchmarks. If an AI figures out how to hack the test, companies can spin that in a press release as the AI being super smart and needing safety alignment, which just drives more investment hype.
There was a really interesting philosophical debate in the comments about the phrase, "the purpose of a system is what it does." Someone argued that if the benchmark allows exploits, then the benchmark is just an exploit-finding game. But others pushed back, saying that ignores the reality of unintended consequences in software design. Nobody designed SWEbench wanting it to be hacked. They just didn't anticipate adversarial AI behavior.
To be fair to the AI labs, a commenter who actually works at OpenAI chimed in to say that they do care about this. They put a lot of effort into manually reviewing model outputs to catch these kinds of hacks, and they don't just blindly report the highest hack scores. But it highlights a massive structural problem in how we evaluate these systems as a whole. If the models are smart enough to write self-erasing privilege escalation exploits, they are definitely smart enough to find the holes in a Python grading script.
It really changes how you look at those benchmark press releases. The Berkeley researchers suggest that the path forward is to aggressively fuzz the benchmarks and design evaluations that actually check if the solution is valid, rather than just looking for a green checkmark from a test runner. But until the industry adopts those practices, we all need to take those leaderboard scores with a massive grain of salt.
That is a perfect takeaway to end on. That is all we have for you today on episode 363 of HN Pod.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to all the articles and Hacker News discussions we covered today.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from the Hacker News front page. Have a great day.